Hello, and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into creating their work. I'm your host, Matt Kuhlman, and my guest this episode is Heidi Hogden. Heidi earned her BFA from the Minneapolis College of Art and Design in 2008, and is a 2012 MFA graduate from the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Working almost exclusively in graphite, Heidi renders realistic images of herself and her home in central Wisconsin. In her most recent series, her drawings approach monumental dimensions, with figures and scenes drawn at life-size scale or larger. Join me as she describes the people, places, and experiences that inspire these drawings. Hello, Heidi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And so, I was looking at your most recent body of work that you did for your MFA thesis, and it very obviously ties into where you're from, so would you like to start by describing your experience growing up where you did?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in Franklin Township, Wisconsin, and I've always had a fascination with the land and environment. And more specifically for my most recent body of work, I was focusing on my home in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, where exactly is that in the state?
It's about in the middle of the state, middle of nowhere, really.
Yeah, so it's a lot of woods around and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I did live in Milwaukee for a little bit, so I'm familiar with the southeastern urban region, but didn't go up that way ever, really.
Yeah, it's pretty rural.
What's it like living around there? Were you in a very isolated place, or was there a town close by?
I grew up in a nearby town called Black River Falls, but we've had this farm while I was growing up, and it's a farm with a big red barn, and we loaned it out for cattle and things like that while I was growing up. I rode horses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's... The closest town is about 15 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty remote, surrounded by Amish.
Yeah. And so growing up around there, at what point did you decide to pursue art? Because I know that being out in kind of isolated environments and being cut off from the art community, mm-hmm. it takes a lot of initiative to pursue that on your own.
Sure, yeah. Well, I grew up actually in a very artistic home because my mom is a painter.
Okay.
And she taught watercolor classes out of our home as I was growing up, and so I was always around her artistic influence, but also had people coming to our place and painting and drawing and experiencing that from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And she always really encouraged me to do artistic things and always provided me with like art materials. If I was interested in something, we would go and get it and have, you know, make crafts or paint or whatever it was. So it was really nurtured from a young age that I should go into art, and that's why I had sort of a community in a way. Well, coming out to Boston to get my MFA, I was at a distance from my home for the first time, living somewhere out on the East Coast, and remembering home in a different way than I ever had before because of that distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to reapproach the landscape of my home through that lens or view.
Mm-hmm. How do you think your perception of your home changed from being away from it?
Well, I think that's more of like a question for me.
Mm-hmm.
And through each work I'm trying to explore that. And I'm not even exactly sure why, but I think that's why I'm excited about making work, and what gets me excited about it is exploring that question.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of wondering what has changed, what is different, and also how my memories of the place have become changed over time and idealized in a way over time. So I often go home to reinvestigate the landscape and my view of it has changed because of how I have changed, but also how it has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So that often is the start of a project.
Mm-hmm. Have you been back many times since you've come out here?
I go back once or twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So through that, you can kind of see like different stores come in or different changes in the environment.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as you remembered it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's something, too, that other people can relate to, is that change in home, or what we used to call home.
Mm-hmm.
And more specifically, I had been looking at the land and how it changed. So I was talking with my family about it, going home and photographing the land, and also looking at deer camera images to look at the land in a different way, because my family, well, I should say my brothers and my dad are big hunters, so they put out deer cameras. So I was also looking a lot at those images to look at changes and also views that I wouldn't typically see if I went home and saw the land, but it was always there and sort of mysterious. Mm-hmm. That was interesting.
What kind of changes were occurring in the land? Is there a lot of development going on there? Is it changing pretty radically in some way?
It is in some ways. We, rather than having a traditional farm, if you could say, now it's changed a lot to have a lot of prairie plantings.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's partially a tree farm, so often the trees grow radically,
mm-hmm.
and the animals are always changing, and it's different.
Mm-hmm. And getting to some of the specific images from your recent work,
mm-hmm.
are pretty much all of these from the deer cameras that you were talking about?
They aren't all from the deer cameras. Some are from me going back and revisiting it, specifically these ones of trees and reeds are ones that I took myself. I'm going back. Oh, and the deer mount as well.
Mm-hmm. Are the trees that you are drawing those part of the tree farm that you were referring to?
Yeah, they're actually elm trees too.
Mm-hmm.
Two elm trees that were planted around the time that I was growing up, and so I've seen them change quite radically, and also saw them as a metaphor, of course, for growing and changing over time as far as what they look like.
So are they about to be cut down now that they're part of a tree farm? Or?
They aren't, actually. No. But it's kind of amazing. Although they were drawn from a winter image, so they look sort of dead in a way, they are actually alive, which is sort of interesting because Dutch elm disease is attacking many of the elm trees now. They might die soon,
yeah.
No matter what.
And there was a picture of a field that you referred to earlier. What was that image of specifically?
Sure. When I went back last year, I wanted to go and do some of the things I did as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things was just going out and laying in the grass and looking up at the sky and sort of letting the grass surround me, and it felt like I was isolated and alone, and I could just stare at the sky and just enjoy its sort of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went back, I did that again and just photographed that experience. So that's what this image of reeds and sky comes from.
Mm-hmm. And in some of the other pieces that were drawn from the deer camera photos, how often... They only go off when there's motion, right? They're motion sensors.
Correct.
There would always be something there, pretty much, right? Was it mostly just deer that you were seeing? Because there's a lot of drawings of deer and one of a person.
Right.
What kind of things turn up, I guess, in those?
Sure. Well, I was communicating a lot with, specifically with Eric, my brother. And And I wanted more photographs to look at. I just wanted lots of resources, to sort of choose which images to draw from. And this Deer Motion camera that they put out just really provided that for me. Essentially, they put it out on trails where a deer walks by, and it snaps photographs, and they look for areas where the biggest deer goes by, and that's where they'll put up their stand for the hunting season. So it takes thousands of photographs, and he sent me like 3,000 photographs or something like that. And most of them are deer, day or night. It kind of flashes a bright light at night. So they were all different, big deer, small deer, males, females. Even like turkeys would walk by on it, or dogs, or and then some are just, I don't know, grass is blowing in the wind or snow falling, so it catches it anyways because it's motion. So I had to sort of siphon through all these photographs and choose out ones that I was particularly interested in. And so the first of these were kind of these smaller drawings that I made, exploring those deer cameras. One's in the snowy winter, an image of two deer caught on the camera, and then an image of a buck that was at night, so a light had flashed, and I was sort of interested in capturing how that light flashed on that deer, and it was sort of startled in the moment.
Yeah, it looks, that one's very ghostly compared to the other ones. It's kind of whitewashed out. And are these about five images here? Are these the only ones that you've done out of those photos, or are there more that aren't published on your website?
These are the ones that I drew from
Okay.
the deer camera.
Do you plan to keep working with it?
I maybe. I'm thinking about it.
Or perhaps getting your own deer camera and using it in an urban environment.
I guess there are all sorts of different things you could do with it.
See what's
It'd be an
happening on the
interesting
corner at
tax
4 in the
write-off,
morning.
that's for sure. So the other two images that I drew from the camera are two bucks fighting, where the images themselves that were taken from the camera were actually quite blurry. So I fantasized the image a bit with a more ambiguous background, and the other image was the last drawing that I made from the deer camera, and it's of my brother Eric that was caught in the camera.
And they all have a very dreamy quality. Is that just mimicking what's on the camera, or is that an addition of your own?
It's mostly an addition of my own. My memories of home are really full of nostalgia, and so that's something I really wanted to imbue in these pieces.
And I noticed even going back in your previous pieces to the series, they're all done in graphite, pretty realistic rendered graphite drawings. Process-wise, why do you think that's the best way to create your images?
Yeah, everything is made with graphite on paper. Liquid graphite, graphite powder and pencil. And I just am completely seduced by what graphite can do. Like I almost don't even have an exact reasoning for it, except that it's immediate, and the black and white qualities of graphite connect to those memories and how I'm approaching them. And again, I'm just completely seduced by the medium and think that it can do sort of beautiful techniques and methods.
Mm-hmm. And looking back at some of your other pieces previous to your most recent series, what kind of transition are we getting into in the work there?
For a long time in, for a while in grad school, I was making self-portraits, investigating myself and the immediate space around me. And as I sort of transitioned into my most recent body of work investigating home, I started placing myself in outdoor environments, and I was interested in those environments showing some sort of change. So this piece that I made, Watching, Waiting, was an image of me in a tub, which at times I bathe outdoors, and it wasn't odd to me or anything at the time, but sort of reapproaching that experience and then redrawing it from being here and letting the medium of graphite sort of be ambiguous for that background. And breath is an image of me underwater and again exploring that, the body in a landscape, and seeing what happens to the image as it becomes more abstract, or if it has elements of it that are more realistic. So being interested in that interplay.
And you actually staged all these photographs. It's not just creating.
Right. I did these two. Yeah. And the images of myself before that, they were more staged. And the work that I did about the landscape, about my home, that I left a little bit more up to chance. So they were my brother's images, or, you know, I snapped a ton of pictures and chose one randomly. So I let myself lose a little bit of that control over my source material.
And having that kind of performative aspect and creating images, have you considered expanding into more of a performative role in your work? Or?
At the time, I was reading performance theories and interested in that. And I think I saw these images as sort of documentation of that performance.
But you'd rather have the work be the work itself, not the performance.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I see the work as the drawing as the final product of that experience.
Were any of these directly inspired by existing works? Because the ones where you're sleeping, I know, didn't Andy Warhol do a video of himself sleeping for 8 hours or so?
Just yeah, I was being influenced by a lot of different people when I was doing the images of myself sleeping. I actually was having a really hard time sleeping at the time that I made those, and I was interested in how the body tosses and turns, and it's almost like you're in the middle of a dreamlike state, but not, because you're still awake, and that's why the drawing has a lot of negative space or white space around the figures. I wanted to sort of evoke that feeling of being awake and asleep sort of simultaneously, if you can imagine that place.
And how did you do those? Did you just have a time lapse camera set up?
And I did it as a diptych because I was interested in showing that time that can happen while you're in that place, and how that time can seem to go on forever.
Yeah. Did you have like a longer series of those where there's like 8 to 10, different
I did
images
consider
of?
doing that, but I was moving through projects quickly while I was in school. I wanted to explore really what I wanted to do, and so this was like a step along that journey. So I definitely think there is room for doing more multiples in this project, but decided to keep continuing my conceptual process and
Yeah, could have been bigger, but just decided to move on to a different
right.
one. And I guess doing everything in graphite drawings, I mean, these drawings have to take a long time, right? So you'd really
They
have to
do.
make a big commitment to do something that big. And all your recent works are pretty large scale too, right? They're
Yes. Everything but the a couple of them are life size. So the
Life
image
size,
of
deer size.
yes.
They make paper
Yes, they do. I
that
had to find it, but
big?
they do. Yeah, so the image of my brother, the image of the two deer fighting, the image of the starbuck, the mounted deer head, were all done life size.
So, how long would you guess you're spending on each piece then?
It's really hard to say. Because sometimes I work on pieces simultaneously. Sometimes I'm under strict deadlines, so I have longer hours. But for the most part, usually a month or two on each piece.
Probably like 80 to 100 hours per drawing, something like that.
It's hard to say. I mean, the image of the two deer fighting definitely took me a month and a half of 14-hour days, almost 7 days a week. But I was in thesis mode, you know? I had a studio, that's what that year was for, and it was for some intense drawing time, and so I really wanted to utilize that. And the image of my brother came a little bit faster because I had to put my thesis show together, and so I was like, I want to do one more, and just sort of banged it out.
I guess spending that long with each image, then, like, what kind of relationship do you develop with it, I guess? Because the way you think about the image in the beginning and the way you think about the end have to be a lot different, right?
Yes.
And just
Yeah, I
the kind
think.
of thought process you go through in making it.
Yeah, I can, it's sort of funny. I can look at like a part of a drawing and connect it to a specific time that I was making it and thing that I was thinking about while I was making it. Because of the time spent while I'm drawing an image, I often think about things or I'm listening to things, and sort of letting that digest along with drawing and sort of making drawing choices. And so it's easy to for me to fall in love with them, in a kind of an intimate way.
So you weren't working that large in some of the previous pieces, though, right? Like, I see there's
No.
one of two figures down
Yeah,
there.
these were a bit smaller than life. And I was investigating relationships to other people in those works. And but what I found by working life size is that there's just a different relationship with the viewer. People can come in and they aren't approached by a miniature image of my brother, but they're approached by like the life-size image of my brother. And in that way, it's just a different bodily experience. And also like they're it's like they're approaching somebody. I don't know. I think it brings a different kind of life to the images, especially when working almost photorealistically in some of these. So that's what I have been motivated to create more recently.
So you'd want the viewer to see these as an immersive experience in a way.
Right.
Are there any aspects you plan on bringing in that would kind of make that a more all-encompassing 3D immersive experience, like the through the installation process or any additional material perhaps?
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot, and I have worked in it with different mediums at different points in my life, and have considered installation, and I think that's something I might approach in the future. But for now, I think the drawings, if they can sort of hold their own in a way, if they can be that experience, that is something that I was definitely interested in this project and interesting in continuing for the show I have at Essex Arts Center in September.
And so I suppose now that you've finished the school and you've been spending hundreds of hours thinking about your home, do you plan on staying around Boston area or East Coast and working here?
It's hard to say, because I'm really interested in teaching, and I'm excited to have a postgraduate teaching fellow at SMFA this next year. So I will be here in Boston this next year, but then I'll be applying for jobs, teaching positions, and I might sort of have to go where the job takes me at that point. So it's hard to say where I'm going. At some point, I would like to go back to the Midwest, but I'm not exactly sure when that will be.
Moving forward with your work, do you anticipate like a new series of completely different work from what we're seeing already? Something that might investigate this as your home more now, I suppose.
Well, I have been, I went back to Wisconsin a couple weeks ago, and when I was home, I took images of bird nests and a little, and my mom found an image of a little fawn, or she took a picture of a little fawn, and so I'm thinking about continuing that project for in the near future, but then maybe merging into something else eventually.
How do people from the city kind of regard your work, because it's from a very different place than they usually are? How do you find audiences in the city react to that subject matter, I suppose?
It's kind of funny you're asking that, because like during the thesis opening, at least, there were several different people from Wisconsin that came up to me and were like, "This is Wisconsin." And I was like, "Good, yes, that's what I was going for." But I think it is maybe difficult for some audiences in Boston to connect with the imagery. Definitely for the deer mount, deer head drawing that I made, people, I get really mixed reactions, strong reactions on that piece. Like, oh, this is totally grotesque, or
like some people, rights people that are really...
Yeah, or like some people understand like the beauty that I was trying to recreate in that image. It's a little interesting. Often hunters are interested in the work, but it definitely it appeals to some and not to others. But I think most people can sort of identify with the aspect of drawing and seeing it as just the image of a drawing interesting or beautiful, or connecting with that aspect of it.
Are you starting to see any parallels between your home in Wisconsin and your home here, being in the city? Just the conceptually of using kind of these found photographs that are someplace where you can't be to take them. You need a machine to do it, because otherwise it would kind of scare the wildlife off. Are you starting to find any of those similar situations in the city?
Actually, at one point I was interested in paralleling the two landscapes of, you know, New England and Wisconsin. And so I made a drawing of the ocean from out here. Mm-hmm. And which we obviously don't have in Wisconsin, and then paralleling it next to the image of reeds and sky,
mm-hmm.
and letting that shift in perspective be a metaphor for my own shift in perspective on the two places, with one horizon point being really high, one being really low, and letting them sort of be a diptych at one point.
Mm-hmm. Do you plan to stick with photorealism? Or do you ever envision your work kind of morphing into more, I guess, modern, for lack of a better term, like aesthetic of kind of mixed imagery on the paper?
Yes. I think that there is a lot of room for more fantasy or more abstraction in what I do. And letting that idea of sort of foggy memory or idealized memory come through in the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So with the pieces that I'm making now, I'm interested in doing elements that are more realistic and then letting elements sort of fade away or become sort of hazy or abstracted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess another way of asking that would be, you've chosen to stick with photorealism for the most part through your works now. What do you think that brings to it that using that kind of mixture of imagery wouldn't be able to do before? Or what led to the decision to stick with pretty straight photographic imagery?
I think what led to that decision was choosing one photograph to work from rather than a mixture of photographs as source material. So at one point I really wanted to stay true to the image for some reason. Like I wanted to replicate it in a way, but now I'm sort of interested in not necessarily replicating it but making active choices while I'm drawing to change it or fantasize it.
And that concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Heidi Hogden. You can find her work online at HeidiHogden.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, MattKuhlman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation via PayPal to StudioSessionsPodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee that I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit BigRedAndShiny.com for future episodes, along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.